Au revoir, nous finis dans ça.
Hello, Indigenous Earthlings. Here we are again, seven revolutions later, balancing into yet another Express Yourself. I'm Luke Nessler, and that was Jamie Stone's Folk Life with Mwe Pa Dance. Did I say that right, ladies? I don't know. But anyway, I can tell she's quite a singer, isn't she? Jamie Stone's Folk Life, according to their website, follows the bends and bayous through deep river of song and story. And Jamie Stone's Folk Life visits the Temporary tonight for a show at 8 o'clock. Today's Express Yourself begins with a 2018 resident artist at the Carbondale Clay Center. The Clay Center's resident artist program is 18 years old this year. And this year's residents are Savannah LeBove. Hi, Savannah.
Hello there.
Welcome to Katie and Kay.
Thank you.
Also joining us is Stephanie Seguin. Hi,
Hi,
Stephanie.
How are you today?
I'm well, thanks. How are
good.
You?
Good. Thanks for having us.
So how does it feel to be a resident artist at Carbondale Clay Center?
Well, it's a completely new experience for me. I'm just coming out of my undergraduate, so this is a different kind of step away from working in academia mm-hmm. and having some time to myself in the studio as well as giving back to the community. So it's been a great experience so far.
How do you give back to the community?
We teach classes at the Clay Center, adult and kids classes. There's also a few outreach programs that I'm hoping to be involved in the future.
Huh.
Yeah.
How does teaching inform the practice of your art, Savannah?
For me, I think there's so much that you learn when you start to try to teach others. You learn things about how you work, how others understand how you work. And you learn how to communicate better your ideas, and that informs your next projects.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. So that cliche of the teacher learning while he or she teaches is true.
I think it's definitely true, especially when you're first starting out teaching.
Huh. Is that your experience, Stephanie?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I highly enjoy teaching, and I feel like it's something that becomes a bit of a creative process for me. I try to observe how my students are learning, what they're responding to, what's not working, and try to evolve my teaching in that way, and not only through different projects that I'm doing, but also how I'm addressing and presenting the work in front of them.
Did you discover ceramics due to the efforts of a teacher somewhere along the line?
I did. You know, art for me was always something that I had an interest in and kind of focused on as a younger student, and I had a teacher in high school who I think helped me realize that clay was something that I had an interest in. And then especially in my undergrad and graduate studies, the faculty made very large impressions upon me and helped me kind of drive my teaching as well.
The faculty at where? Where did you go?
So I did my undergrad at Minnesota State University, Moorhead. Mm-hmm. And then I just finished my graduate studies at Penn State right before I came here to this residency program.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Now, are both of those places hotbeds of ceramics?
Well, I'd say ceramics. One thing that's really wonderful about it is you can find a community anywhere you go. And so I feel like most communities I've been in, clay is it has its presence. Moorhead State, not so much, but Penn State is definitely known for its ceramics program, and I felt really fortunate to be a part of that.
Mm-hmm. And your experience in education, Savannah?
So I didn't find ceramics until my sophomore year of college. Art had always been a part of my life, but more in a two-dimensional sense. Just the high school that I went to didn't have the facility or capability of working in sculpture, 3D, or ceramics. So it wasn't until I had declared painting and sculpture as majors that it was a requirement to take a ceramics class. And I immediately loved the malleability and the immediacy of just working with the clay and mm-hmm. being able to kind of push it around and do what you want with it and see some direct results. But yeah, definitely the faculty at LSU encouraged me to explore both the ceramics, but also other mediums.
So So you were bitten by the ceramics bug, Savannah.
Yeah.
Have you evolved in the direction of functional ceramics or sculptural?
I definitely started off functional. I was trying to combine my painting practice and ceramic practice in the beginning, and that resulted in carving and drawing and painting on functional wares. But soon I realized I wasn't so concerned with the form and the actual functionality of the piece, and I wanted to explore pattern and the drawings in a more sculptural sense. So that's what I'm focusing on now.
Huh. Now, when you're creating sculptural ceramics, do you draw it first?
Sometimes. Sometimes I'll have an idea and I need to kind of work through it in a two-dimensional sense to find some of the design qualities that I want to portray. Other times it's sketching with clay a small maquette or trying to figure out a certain way how to make it. So a lot of times you're trying and failing and trying again and trying again.
And you're failing 90% of the time?
I don't know about 90% of the time, but I do think a lot of it as artists is problem solving.
Uh-huh.
And so when you're creating, it may not come out exactly how you're expecting or exactly how you're wanting, but then that leads to other ideas and usually better ideas.
Interesting.
To be honest.
Stephanie.
Like, yeah, I feel like that's part of the bug of the creative anything, whether it's music or painting or ceramics, is kind of that allure of what you want to achieve and what you're actually able to achieve. And you kind of step by step get closer and closer to what you want to be making. And I think clay especially is one of those. It's a fairly dramatic medium to work with. There's a lot of steps and processes where things can go wrong along the way. So you can spend weeks and weeks working on something, and in the very last firing, it just like disaster happens, and it's all for nothing. But you've learned something along the way, and so you can apply that to the next piece, and from the mistake you might find a new idea. And absolutely, yeah. So the failure is very much so part of the process.
And your work, Stephanie, mm-hmm. is mostly sculptural.
I would say so. Yeah, it's. I often kind of talk about it that it alludes to function but isn't functional. I'm often looking at vessels and forms that you might find on tables or in decorative places, and taking those and pairing them with objects that create a composition that starts to ask some questions.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, I looked on your website, which, by the way, is Stephanie Seguin. That's SEEGUIN ceramics.com.
Yes, SEGUIN. Yep.
Just one E.
Just one E. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Anyway, I looked at your portfolio, and some of those functional pieces, I can see exactly your point, verging on, like, some of them look like right out of a Nightmare by Gaudi.
I like that. Very I've not heard that before.
Very whimsical.
Yeah. Well, I like it to be playful. You know, I want there to be some recognition, something that's accessible for the viewer to come into the piece. And I find vessels, especially decorative vessels, faces, pictures, etc. That's something that people see often, whether it's clay or not. And it's a kind of an approachable point to come into the work that I'm doing.
I think it was, pardon me, I think it was in your archive on your website that mm-hmm. I saw quite a few pieces in front of drawings.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? The drawings
well,
were part
of... Well,
so
most recently, I think my current work has uh-huh. most of the drawings with it. And, you know, Savannah was talking about how she started drawing and then wanted that to become three-dimensional, so moved into the clay. I've kind of gone the reverse of that, where I started in the clay and then wanted to try to enter the space of the 2D and have been curious about finding that kind of 2.5D space.
What does that mean, 2.5D?
Well, somewhere between what's flat and what's volume, and where does that kind of boundary exist, and how can I push that boundary of something existing in space versus on a plane?
Okay.
Yeah, so for example, some of the images that I have on my work or on my website right now, I think become more powerful as an image than they do of the physical 3D object. So in a way, I've created props with the ceramic pieces that I'm making that I can arrange and display to take a photograph, and then the photograph becomes the actual work.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm. And it's prints of the photograph that you sell or
right.
hopefully
so. Yeah. And I mean, I'm still in flux, you know. Uh-huh. A lot of this work is newer from grad school. I entered grad school doing functional tableware, decorative work, so mugs, plates, bowls, and that changed fairly quickly when I got into school and started to ask myself some harder questions and became a little more truthful about what I wanted, truthful to myself about what I wanted to be making versus uh-huh. just making what I saw out in the world that I liked. Uh-huh. And so I'm figuring that out. And part of the appeal for me of the residency at Carbondale Clay Center was to be able to kind of take a year to digest and unpack everything that I had discovered in school and see where it takes me uh-huh. and what I plan to do with it.
Savannah, you've had some experience with painting, and it strikes me that that knowing and learning and practicing color could be very useful in a ceramics piece also.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think a lot of people think of ceramics as just the making of the clay, but that's really only half, if not less, of the process. There's after that, there's two firings, and that's where color can come into play a lot. I mean, the clay body has its own color, but yeah, I'm definitely always thinking about the color of the actual piece, the color of the wall that it's going to exist on, or the pedestal, you know, all of those colors play into that. So I do lean on my painting background in that uh-huh. regard.
Huh. Well, that's obvious on your Instagram page. Lots of colors. Lots of colors. Really colorful pieces. Yeah. Do you see yourself ever working in black and white? Or is there such a thing in ceramics? Black and I guess there must be.
Well, my immediate thought was my sketchbook is pretty much black and white. It's white pages and Micron black pen. So I do feel like the base of new projects and ideas, they do start that way. Uh-huh. And then slowly, depending on if I'm working towards a show or a body of work, I'm always thinking about how the pieces are going to exist together. And I also think sharing a space with Stephanie, like we rub off on each other whether or not we want to. And so, you know, she at the very beginning was working with a lot of white, and I have found myself like toning it down on the color. I had a lot of failures with some glaze testing, and I kind of decided to give up on trying to put so much color all at once and focus more on form and the process of making and to deal with some of the color choices later.
Huh. Interesting. Interesting. At some point, I don't know if it was a caption on one of your Instagram pics or somewhere else, but you talk about pattern on pattern on pattern.
Yes.
Tell me more. That's interesting.
Well, I had this moment in undergrad. I was my second to last semester. So it was my last year of school. And I was starting to look towards a BFA show, and I wanted to have my own show by myself. And I knew I didn't want functional work. And I had this realization that when I was making functional work and trying to combine the painting with it, it translated into carving or drawing pattern. And at some point, I wanted the form to fall away, and I wanted to create actual physical sculptural pattern. And so I was combining the painting and ceramics still, but it started with a base of pattern that a painting formed on top of, and I took that same pattern and made it in the three dimension out of clay. And then the two were shown together side by side for the show.
Oh, that's interesting. And that was a new direction for you? Something
very much so. I had been making functional work prior to that. So it was like at the very end of my schooling, deciding to turn away from everything I knew and try something completely different. So I'm kind of in the same boat as Stephanie in terms of digesting and kind of looking back on and reflecting what I had just started at the end of my schooling and wanting to continue it.
Uh-huh. That sounds like a brave choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a little nerve-wracking, but I think it paid off.
How so?
Well, I feel like it just like Stephanie said, realizing something about yourself and what I was missing and the satisfaction. And I knew that my forms and functionality, they weren't where I wanted it to be, but I didn't want to focus my time on perfecting those. I wanted to spend more time on the pattern and the repetition and the drawing and the three dimension. So I decided to focus on that. And maybe one day I'll bring the function back in. But I also don't like thinking of function and sculpture as separate things. I think they're together in so many ways. And it's not necessarily a good thing to separate them.
Interesting. I see you shaking your head, Stephanie.
Well, that's an interesting point to make. I tend to separate function and sculpture, but I think you're right. I think that it probably doesn't do us all in the clay world much justice to do that. I feel like my work tends to kind of walk the line of functional and sculptural. Like I said, it's forms that are alluding to function, but if you were to want to use them, they're not going to function all that well. I'm not paying a lot of attention to the utility and the practical use. But there's a place for them to all come together. Mm-hmm. So worth investigating.
On your website, Stephanie, excuse me, you talk about the peculiarities and the curiosities.
Yeah.
Tell me more. That's an interesting concept.
Yeah. So I think in that same line, it talks about the overlooked and the unseen. And I think what I'm most interested with my studio work and what I try to remind myself of often is to find the nuance instead of the novelty, or to substitute the nuance for the novelty. I think for a long time in clay, I was very interested in what was kind of hot, what was coming out, what was new trends, new techniques, and really wanting to match that and kind of learn through replicating other people's work that I was seeing and figure out, how do they do that? I want to do that. And then once I achieved that, figuring out, okay, well, it's not quite me. Maybe I'll try what this person's doing. And kind of working my way down the line and asking myself more and more questions that were authentic to myself and not just what do I like to see and what do I wish I were making, I discovered that this idea of the overlooked and the subtleties, and that's something I think is missed often in daily life. We can always find the big and sometimes the bad, but it's hard to find the little moments, and I think the little moments are really important. And so I think those subtleties are something I try to bring to my work, or at least have helped drive the questions.
Is that discovering those little moments, is that a process thing, or is that a materials thing? Is it both? What is it?
It's probably both. Process more than anything. You know, I feel like a lot of times I will be on kind of on a path to an end goal. Like I'll sit down and I'll say, all right, this is what I'd like to do. And in trying to execute that, I might be sitting in my studio having lunch. My mind's kind of not on my work. And all of a sudden I realize, oh, that looks really good sitting like that. And so just kind of being open to the accidental and trying to be aware of what is it about the way that's leaning that is so visually appealing to me. Okay, it's this. So how do I bring that intentionally into my work? Those, I think, are the little moments that come through in process.
Is that your experience too, Savannah?
I think so, yeah. When we were talking about failures and the problem solving, I think that goes hand in hand with what Stephanie was saying. I'm thinking about a piece that I've been trying to execute, and I was trying to do it in certain ways, and I knew it wasn't going to work out, but I needed to try it anyhow. And trying it in certain ways informed size, scale, how is it going to sit on the wall? And then that led to new discoveries on how to make. And I've executed it in a certain way. And there were so many subtleties and little moments that were surprises. They were completely unplanned. But there was something about the process that I was choosing to make this piece that I think is going to inform many more pieces to come, just because of those small moments, those accidental subtleties.
That's really exciting.
It is. I think so as well.
Yeah, I could see that for sure. Ed, go ahead.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I think that's part of the addictive quality.
Exactly. You know? It's so addictive.
You reach the goal you thought you had, and you're like, okay, wait, no, now I've got six more.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned that part of your residency at the Carbondale Clay Center is teaching. Is there an opportunity to be taught? Are there mentors that come along and answer questions or direct you in different directions?
There are. Yeah. So this year, I think, is the first year, right?
Yeah. I think so.
The Clay Center has paired up with several local, well-established, known artists to provide a mentorship program for the residents of the Clay Center. And so we're meeting with them. We just kind of, maybe a few weeks ago, had our very first group meeting, kind of as a get to know each other. Savannah and I had them into our studio space where we presented our work and discussed kind of like a small critique, or a short critique, I should say.
Yeah.
And then from there, we will reach out independently. And these mentors have offered up their time to kind of whatever we're interested in. They've said, if you want a studio critique, we'll do that. If you're interested in talking about
life,
yeah, what it's like to be an artist, how we got where we are, yeah, ideas you have, and so that's really exciting to be a part of that this first year that they're running it.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Huh. How about that? Was Carbondale on your radar before? When? How did Carbondale and the Clay Center get onto your radar? How did that happen? Because you're from Louisiana, yeah, Savannah, and you're from Minnesota. How did mm-hmm. that happen?
Well, for me, at Louisiana State University, there was a grad student, Mike Stumbris. He was a former resident, and he kind of took me underneath his wing a little bit in terms of encouraging me in what's next, what's after school. I think he saw a potential and wanted me to strive for more. And whether or not that was applying to grad school or residencies. So he kind of gave me a list of, hey, you should check this out. Hey, you should check this out. And it's all in passing, just in the ceramic studio in the hallway kind of thing. But he kept bringing up Carbondale. He had been here. He had experienced it. And he kind of knew that I was looking for something smaller. I mean, I went to a university of 30,000, and I am now living in a town of about, what, six, uh-huh, a little bit more than six. Uh-huh. And so, yeah, I applied to a few different places, and this seemed like a great fit for me.
Yeah, for me, Carbondale was always on my radar since I was an undergrad, and it just never quite made sense to apply to this residency. I had other opportunities, and I just, my path took me a little different way, but leaving school, my husband and I wanted to be back in the mountains. We were in Pennsylvania, which was very beautiful, but before that, we were in northwestern Montana. So I think we were ready to be back in the Rockies and experience a small mountain town, but also wanted to go somewhere new and not just go back to where we had come from to go to grad school. And it felt like a good time to apply for a residency. And just like Savannah, it felt like a good fit. I think it has been a good fit probably for both of us. So, yeah.
I'd like for both of you to give me a sense of what the coming year looks like for you as a resident at the Carbondale Clay Center.
Busy.
Really busy. Lots of teaching. But the biggest thing on our horizon, I think, is our show. Mm-hmm. We have a joint show in July. It'll be first Friday of July. that's kind of, I feel like, is the milestone, or like the marker at this point, what we're working towards. I don't know if you feel that way, Stephanie, but yeah, that's definitely how I feel. And then after that, I'm not sure. Like, that's as far as I'm thinking right now. And we'll be here for another year and have solo shows the following summer. So that'll probably then be the next big milestone. But yeah.
Huh, so yeah, it sounds like it's useful to have that show as a goal.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it kind of gives us a frame of reference, like, okay, you have a certain amount of time to explore and have some R&D in your studio, but you also need to be, you know, making something that you want to showcase, and how is it going to look together, and all the things that come with putting a show on.
Right. Huh. Well, and it's in any aspect of life, it's amazing how quickly time flies. But I'm, you know, just realizing the other day, we're halfway through our first year of our residency.
Can't believe it.
And it feels like we just got here. At least I feel that way.
I agree.
And there's been a lot of exploration, but yeah, definitely having a deadline and a goal is a good way to kind of push the creative juices instead of just kind of falling back on what you know and what you enjoy doing, starting to challenge yourself a little harder because you know you've got an event coming up. So, yeah,
very interesting. Well, it's really fascinating to talk to you about what your work and how you do it and what you do. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much,
Stephanie Seguin, mm-hmm. and Savannah LeBove.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yes. Yeah. All right. Stay with me. There is more to come on Express Yourself.
They take the interstate, pictures out their windows, hotel bound. It's a postcard town. Step out off the highway and take a look around at a postcard town. Where the plains meet the hills of green and gray, big old storm rolling in, prairie smoke fades away. Rivers high this morning after days and days of rain. Look out on the basin, here comes that passing coal train. It's a postcard town. Step out. Take a look around at a postcard town.
That is Postcard Town from Two Tracks, and that is the title track from their most recent CD produced by Will Kimbrough. The Nashville Blues Society says, with Postcard Town, the Two Tracks reach down into our collective souls with a batch of well-crafted songs that are delivered from a storyteller's point of view, and the musicianship and harmonies are as sweet as honey in the rock. The Two Tracks play Steve's guitars tonight, and we hoped to have them live in the studio, but it just didn't happen. However, we do have Dave Huebner, guitarist and singer of the Two Tracks, live on the telephone. Hello, Dave.
Hey, how's it going?
Very well. How are you?
We're doing good. Just driving through the wild Colorado countryside.
Well, and before that, the wild Wyoming countryside. That's a long drive from Sheridan, Wyoming.
Yeah, it turned out to be about a full hour longer than we anticipated. anticipated, I think.
So what is that, 12, 14-hour drive?
What? It's like almost 9, I think, or 8 oh. and a half or something.
Oh, not quite. That's not too bad.
Yeah.
For those of us out west, that ain't nothing.
That's right. That's what
well, give us all a sense of the two tracks. How did you guys come together? What is it that you're trying to do with your music?
Well, Julie and Fred have been playing with a variety of folks in the town of Sheridan for a few years, and I met them in the studio a couple of years ago when we were putting together the first album, and we had bassist Russell Smith join the band then as well, and we toured that record around the West and really gelled as a group and started working on new material, and so that's why we came out with another album just a year later, and had the wonderful opportunity to go to Nashville to do that. And I think we're just really excited to get the music out there and really expand on the sound that we've, you know, started with here. And we now have a new bass player who lives in the town of Sheridan, Aaron Asher, and he's a wonderful musician and been a great addition to the group. And you know, there's nothing quite like spending 9 hours in a band together to really kind of gel your creative forces here. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll bet that is. You know, as I said, your CD, Postcard Town, was produced by Will Kimbrough. That's a coup. How did you connect with Will Kimbrough?
Oh, well, we have a mutual friend named Viola Krause, and she likes to, you know, come out to festivals here in the West, and we were camping out with her, and she's like, you know, you guys really need to connect with Will about producing your next record. Are you going back into the studio soon? And I said, yep. And so she put a bug in his ear and sent him our music, and he loved it and said, yeah, let's do it. Here's my time frame. And we basically had 5 days that worked out for everybody in Nashville, and we drove out and made it happen.
Now, did you do a lot of multi-tracking, or did you play live in the studio? How did that come together?
We played it all live in the studio. Yeah, there was a few additions. Bruce Fountain's pedal steel work was added in later from his home studio. But Will was actually tracking all of his little additions with us live in the studio.
Oh, how about that? So what he's playing on it too. How about that? That's great.
Yeah, there's some extra guitar parts here and there, and some, you know, some subtle little additions and some mandolin and banjo and a couple things. And just, you know, whenever it kind of caught his ear, he might hear something or, you know, like, oh, I think maybe this could benefit from a little high rhythm guitar or a little something of this or a little organ or, and he would just go in there and try a few different things while we were tracking.
Tell me a little bit about Sheridan and the music scene in Sheridan. It's certainly a beautiful area, and it's I'm sort of guessing that the landscape of Sheridan is a big part of your art and your artistic process. Am I right?
Yeah, I think it's safe to say everybody in the band is influenced by open spaces and wilderness and mountains and having access to those open spaces all around you, which I'm sure, you know, here in Western Colorado, you guys have that as well. And there is something about the stories of the West, I suppose, that make their way into our music. And I personally am inspired a lot by wilderness trips and hiking and camping out. And that's definitely what influences a lot of my songwriting. I think Julie finds a lot of those same kind of inspirations in her work as well.
So is it the two of you that are the primary songwriters in the band?
Yeah, so far anyway. We've penned most of the songs, and I've added in 4 or 5 or so of mine. But we've got a fresh new batch already growing for the next album.
Oh, nice. Now, do you road test those songs? Are you planning to play a few of those at Steve's tonight?
Yeah, we will be playing some of those at Steve's tonight.
Uh-huh. Yep. Huh. How about that? Let's see. I was going to ask you, well, So from Sheridan, it's just a hop and a skip up to Montana. Do you, is that where you go to play a lot of gigs? Do you also go down to Casper? Do you go over to Jackson and Cody? What's a tour through Wyoming look like for you regularly?
Well, yeah, you touched on quite a few of our spots. Yeah, we try to make regular trips up into Montana for kind of long weekends or a short tour or something. And then we've developed a little routine going out to the Black Hills in South Dakota and all the way out to Sioux Falls, where there's some great people with the White Wall Sessions out there. And then we go down to Denver and Fort Collins and the Front Ranges, and too much of a haul for us. So we get down there, and then we're just out in Jackson and Grand Targhee for some skiing and music. So we kind of, yeah, we made it out to California, too. We do go further afield, California, and we've got a date out east coming up, too. But, yeah, our routine is kind of bounce around to the neighboring states, I guess.
And in Sheridan itself, where are the places that have live music? For somebody just coming up to Sheridan, where do we have to go to get our fix of live music?
Well, there's a few. There's a couple of the, you know, kind of breweries and bars like Black Tooth Brewing, which are good friends of ours, and Luminous Brew House, and there's the No Name Bar. And then you get into the nicer venues, too, like the Wyo Theater, which we have a show coming up there on April 6th. And it's just a beautiful historic theater.
Ooh.
And then we've got this brand new art center, the Whitney Art Center at Sheridan College. So we do have a 2-year college there. They have a really nice as well.
Uh-huh. Huh. That's really great. So is there a house gig for you guys that you're always playing? You must have a following up there.
Yeah, the Wyo, we used to play Black Tooth quite a bit and in a lot of the smaller bars and breweries, but we, with our CD release shows the last couple of years, we've been booking the Wyo Theater, and so we've been focusing on doing an annual spring concert there. And then there's a lot of street fest and music. There's local music festivals like the Bighorn Mountain Festival, and so we've been kind of focusing on those special events throughout the rest of the year, primarily for our local gigs.
Oh, that's great. And on this tour, through this swing through Colorado, where are you playing?
Well, we're at Steve's tonight, as you said, and then tomorrow we head down to Mile High Spirits in Denver, where they have been doing this Bluegrass and Bloodies brunch series. So we'll pull out some of our grass ear tunes for that and enjoy some Bloody Marys in the afternoon. And then on Sunday we head back over the I-70, and so not the greatest routing, but it just how it worked out. And we'll be in Grand Junction at the KAFM radio room.
Oh, nice.
Another sweet.
Yeah, that's great. All right. Well, Dave Huebner of Two Tracks, I want to thank you for joining us here on KDNK. I wish we could have heard you in person, but if people want to hear you in person, they can catch you tonight at Steve's Guitars.
All right. Thanks, Luke. I appreciate it.
You betcha. Take care and good luck to you.
All right. Thank you.
All right. That's Dave Huebner from the Two Tracks. And as soon as you hear, let's play another Two Tracks tune, Into the Gray, it's called. And as soon as the music starts, give me a call here at 963-2976 if you'd like a pair of tickets to see Two Tracks at Steve's Guitars tonight.
Satisfied until the thrill of running round with all those crazy wild girls again. She waits by the window as the cars pass on by. Oh, how can a woman be so bottled up inside? He don't come home no more. He don't.
That's the two tracks, Into the Gray, from their CD called Postcard Town. Two tracks playing Steve's guitars tonight. The Green is the New Black fashion show opens tonight and plays again tomorrow night. Both performances are sold out, so you're going to have to wait for the video. Local producer Hamilton Pevick gives us a good sense of the mystique of fashion show. The Green is the New Black fashion show.
I received a mysterious message in my electronic mail system instructing me to go to the Carbondale 3rd Street Center at night.
Did you guys hear that? After you line up and get in your place, everyone's gonna go off to stage right. Okay? Let's try one more time. Here we go.
It seems I am at the first all-cast rehearsal of this year's Green is the New Black fashion extravaganza. Ready to wear upcycled clothes hang on racks next to elaborate costumes emblazoned with tarot symbology. This is more than just a fashion show. I can't quite put my finger on it, but there is a vibe in the air. Perhaps it has something to do with this year's theme, supernatural.
You shall not pass!
Oh my god, did Gandalf just walk by? No, that's Mr. Carbondale. Chatting with Michael Gorman, I wonder, why do we do this?
It's inspiring to see everybody pull it off and come together, do all this work, and then create something beautiful together.
This is the 10th anniversary. After 10 years of sustainable fashion, the evolution is clear.
how far this show has come from the first one we had, when it was a great celebration of our local spirit.
Model Cat Rich.
The level of performance and craftsmanship and possibility has grown exponentially.
Fashionista Laura Stover.
I mean, and we've, over the years, gotten much more technologically advanced.
Early days, we were scrambling for designers that were designing in sustainably.
It has been a decade of directing this show for Carbondale Arts executive director, Amy Kimberly.
In the fashion industry, it was really hard to find people that were doing sustainable design. Well, now, the amount of incredible artists that are creating work right here in our own valley around sustainable fashion has really been growing through this show.
By raising up artists of all kinds, Green is the New Black has become an integral part of the Roaring Fork Valley art scene. Designer Sarah Peterson.
I was in it the first time 2 years ago, and it kind of brought me into the scene of eco-fashion, so it was a really big shift in my life.
It's no longer just about raising money for the arts in schools, as important as that is. It is also about fulfilling our need to create. Designer and model, Dina Barnes.
Well, it just to show you how necessary it is, I was living in Hawaii for the last 6 months, and pretty much 90% of the reason I moved back to the Valley was to be in the show.
Designer Sarah Peterson.
And it kind of helps move me forward as a designer, and it challenges me and gives me a deadline and really pushes me to, you know, step it up.
Model Cat Rich.
It's become necessary for me as an individual because it has helped me find my creative center and my own empowerment and alignment as a confident person. It's, you know, I'm not gonna lie, I love the attention.
Director Amy Kimberly.
Performance has always held a special place in my heart, and this is my way of being able to exercise my creativity.
It is about getting through the winter.
Sometimes when the weather can go up and down and it's cold and dark, I get so much comfort knowing that this creativity is happening up and down the valley.
And it's about doing it together.
I also think the fashion show has been like really fundamental in bringing dancers together who are interested in possibly more seriously dancing throughout the year and creating together.
Choreographer and dancer, Deborah Colley.
And then ultimately like have a huge venue to share it with a really big audience that might not otherwise come and see local dancers perform.
Director Amy Kimberly.
All these people are working towards this single vision, but that vision is being manifested in many different ways. Mm-hmm. Just all these things are out there happening, which I don't get to see all of them, but then the magic of them all coming together and fitting together is another one of my favorite parts of the show.
Even though participating has its own struggles, people keep coming back. Model Michael Gorman.
Even though it takes so much time and energy, I feel so energized and full of creative juices and creative energy.
Designer Sarah Peterson.
At the end of turning my clothes in every year, I'm like, I'm never doing it again. It's so intense, so much work. Like, and then by next fall, I'll be like, ooh. Here we go.
Here we go again.
I'm excited.
I caught up with the designers of Elizabethan, Catherine Graced, and Alchemy Threads, Sarah Peterson. They were fitting Michael Gorman.
So tell me, how was it to imagine Michael Gorman's body?
Oh, oh my gosh,
it was
so
good.
Intense.
Really intense.
Yeah.
Lots of
talking.
Socks,
yeah.
And practice.
Men's sock
fits.
Areas. We call it the ballroom.
Like
it's the
ballroom
conundrum. How much is there?
Yeah.
How much room do you need?
Every guy's different.
Every guy is different. My partner helped a lot, though.
Yeah. That's a perfect place to end the conversation.
Yeah.
For me, this is also a personal story. In the past, I have created video content for the show. I have been a model. And I have danced. And this year, I realized that if I join the production again, all I really want to do is dance. And thanks to this fashion show and all the people who put it together, that dream is now a reality. By the time you hear this, the show has been sold out. There is a reason why it sells out so quickly. To find out why, I encourage you to get involved, to support the arts in schools, and to satisfy your own creative needs. I am Hamilton Pevick, and this show was produced independently.
And produced very well, I might add. Thank you, Hamilton. Well, that brings us nearly to the end of another Express Yourself. Thank you for tuning in. It's Fashion Show Weekend, and the creative energies are flying high in this town. Lots going on. After party at the Marble Distillery tonight and tomorrow night both. Let's go out with a little more music from Jamie Stone's Folk Life playing tonight over there at the Temporary. Here is Hallelujah. Thank you for tuning in. Please remember, well, before we get to that, let's try one more time. If you'd like to see the two tracks at Steve's Guitars tonight, give me a call at 963-2976, and I'll hook you up with a pair of tickets. All right, here is Jamie Stone, and please remember to go out there and express yourself.
So la 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 so la so la so la 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 so 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 la la so so la so la so la so la la so so so.
My soul shall quit this mournful veil and soar to worlds on high. And I'll sing hallelujah, and you'll sing hallelujah. And we'll all sing hallelujah when we arrive. Give joy or grief, give ease or pain, take life or friend.